السلام عليك beseech you, I will grieve you into the night.
I will beseech you, I will grieve you into the night. You are my master, I am alone, I call unto you. You are my master, I am alone, I call unto you.
Because I will be with you till the end, Hussein. In my eyes there's always tears of pain.
Like a river flows for your love, Hussein. Every broken heart cries out your name, cries out your name.
روحي وقلبي لديك صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله يا أبا عبد الله.
روحي وقلبي لديك صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله يا أبا عبد الله.
I can't bear to stay apart. The flame of your love ignites my heart. Your name gives meaning to my soul. To you are raised my hands and call. From your shrine I can't bear to stay apart. The flame of your love ignites my heart. Your name gives meaning to my soul. To you I raise my hands and call.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي ابن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين. May peace and blessings be upon the soul of Imam Hussein عليه السلام and the martyrs of the Battle of Karbala. Every year, as the month of Muharram arrives, something remarkable happens across the world. Stay tuned with us.
Hussein Janam, my tears for you.
For every step I take is to you, Hussein. Till my final breath, your love will remain.
Even if they take my feet and my hands, I'll come crawling to your holy land. To your holy land.
Ruhi wa qalbi ladayka.
Every year, as the month of Muharram arrives, something remarkable happens across the world, in cities and villages, in grand mosques and humble homes, in west part of Asia, in Africa, Europe, Americas. Millions of people gather to remember the story that took place more than 14 centuries ago, yet somehow it continues to feel deeply relevant today. What is it about this story that continues to move hearts across generations and cultures? Why do people who have never met one another, who speak different languages and come from different backgrounds, feel connected through this day and these days of Muharram and Safar? So we're going to start talking about the month of Muharram. Obviously, the month of Muharram, the blessed month of Muharram, has arrived, and we are absolutely blessed to be alive, to breathe in the atmosphere of Hussein and Ashura, inshallah, in this program. But I'm not alone here. Obviously, I just wanted to say that this is brought to you by IRIB English Radio. Basically, this is the live special program dedicated to the month of Muharram. So I'm joined in this studio by my dear brother Sayyid Samer. Assalamu alaikum, dear brother, and welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Jazakallah ajurukum also.
Jazakallah khair for being here. And dear brother Muhammad, assalamu alaikum, dear brother.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me, brother.
Jazakallah khair for being here. Jazakallah ajurukum.
Appreciate it.
May Allah accept your mornings and everything. So just wanted to humbly ask our dear guests to introduce themselves shortly for our audiences here. So dear Samer, let's start with you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, Aba Abdullah. My name is Samer Hakim. I'm a pharmacist from Australia. I've been here in Qom since 2014, and I've been studying in the Hawza of Qom since then. I'm currently doing a lot of media work.
MashaAllah.
Yeah, trying to put into application what we've learned so far, alhamdulillah.
MashaAllah. Dear brother Muhammad.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu ala al-Husayn wa ala Ali ibn al-Husayn wa ala ulad al-Husayn wa ala ashab al-Husayn. My name is Muhammad Asadi. I am a part-time political activist with Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, and it's a pleasure to be here in your presence. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here. So, dear Sayyid Samer, I want to start a conversation with you. So, the month of Muharram for me is filled with the sense of, you know, nostalgia. When I was a kid, when I, like, my father, my mother, like, brought me to the crowds and, you know, gatherings, and I drank probably tons of Husseini sharba and drinks, and it's all good. Like, I feel it's absolutely spiritual good. I think it's for every one of us, especially in the Shia community, Muslim community, for sure. How do you find the month of Muharram? What does it mean, this month of Muharram, and being in this month, like breathing in this blessed month to you?
Well, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, the holy month of Muharram al-Haram is special for every Muslim across the world. Now, you speak about nostalgia. Unfortunately, when we went to Australia many years ago, there wasn't such a large community of Muslims. So as a child, I didn't really experience that, other than my mother perhaps turning on the cassette to hear the maqtel. It was very different for us. But now, having experienced it more in Iran, it really does give you that vibe. It's amazing. Obviously now in the West, it's grown. It's become a worldwide phenomenon. It is something that is amazing. It's one of those things that has been going on for 1400 years, and something that inshallah we'll talk about in a few minutes with regards to the power that it has had over the world and the global population, the influence that it's had. It's a very significant issue.
Inshallah. And dear brother Muhammad, so many people wait for the month of Muharram to be arrived, as if they waited for the month of Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, arrived to cleanse their soul, to purify their heart.
Correct.
And so they find the month of Muharram a very special month for themselves. So how do you find the month of Muharram?
Correct. What you said is absolutely resonates with many people across the globe, as Muharram is a form of spiritual awakening. And based on what I want to just tell the conversation from what Brother Samer, Dr. Samer said, inshallah, I experienced Muharram in my own specific way. Dr. Samas said when he came to Iran, he could have grasped on what the message of Muharram really is, and it resonated with him. When I traveled abroad to Canada and to the Western world, there I could, you know, grasp on what really Muharram is, because I could see the opposite, ideology, and I could have compared, and I could have, have that sense of, you know, being having that skepticism glass to see what the truth is, and that really defined Muharram for me.
Ah, thank you, mashallah, beautiful. Thank you. And I think this segment of the program, we are ready to listen to an item named "The Name of Hussein is Alive."
The message of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam sees no color, sees no religion, sees no language, sees no background. What is amazing is that we see that today, that throughout the world, in any language, be it English, be it Urdu, Arabic, Farsi, Hausa. You see that the name of Hussein is alive. And when the Imam went to these individuals, for example, John, for example, the Turkish slave that was known as Aslam, the Imam comforted them. There are reports of Jewish individuals on the day of Ashura sacrificing themselves for the Imam. We have the story of Wahab, who was a Christian Arab. We have in the Maqdal many Iranians, well, not only Iranians, the Ajami, who sacrificed themselves for the Imam. The Imam is that individual who follows the saying of his beloved father, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, where he said that man is either your brother in faith or your brother in humanity.
Brothers and sisters, welcome back, and may Allah accept your and our deeds and mournings and weeps and cry and in the months of blessed months of Muharram. So I'm going to pursue the conversation with my dear guest brother Samer, Sayyid Samer. So Sayyidna, when you look at the months of Muharram today, do you see it mainly as a religious event and ritual that just people take it seriously in this sense? Or has it become something much larger than that? Because many people see Muharram simply as a religious observance, but others, such as Ayatollah Khamenei and so many post-revolution Iranian officials, they see it and as something much bigger than that shapes communities and societies and has a great capacity to establish new law and orders to the world. So please.
Yeah, sure. On the surface, it may be a religious ritual that only perhaps the Shias would take part of, but that's not the case. In fact, it has a huge influence over a number of people across the globe. So if you can categorize perhaps into three different things, the manifestation, the influence, and the caravan. Imam Hussein alayhi salam was the manifestation of the Holy Quran. He manifested the true reality of how we should interact with the enemy, how we should interact with each other, how we should interact within ourselves, and how we apply the ayahs of the Holy Quran. So he was the real, true manifestation of the Holy Quran, as his father was, Imam Ali alayhi salam. He was the walking, talking Quran, as is Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So that's number one, the manifestation. Number two, it's the influence that the Muharram and the calamity of Ashura and the calamity of what happened in Karbala, and later on the Arba'in walk, right? This huge influence over people. People from all walks of life come to Karbala. Millions of people come, right? And they're not all Shiites. Many of them are Sunni. Some of them are Christians. Some of them just are there to observe the significant. And they're all going for the one single goal.
And it's not like a luxurious, green, lush, tourist destination. It's desert.
It's a desert. It's a dry. Desert. It's hot. It's difficult. And they walk it. Yeah. They don't have to walk it from Najaf, which is where Imam Ali alayhi salam, the shrine is. They walk it all the way to Karbala, where Imam Hussein alayhi salam's shrine is, which is about 80 odd kilometers. So it's a difficult walk. Obviously, some people who can't will take a car or something to help them with there. But there's a huge amount of walking. It's very difficult, and yet people go and they spend a lot of money. Because it's a congregational caravan, and that's the third point. It's a caravan that we all want to be on. It's something that it's the salvation. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is known as the ark of salvation. Inna al-Hussein masbah al-huda wa safinatu nijat. Right? So we all want to be on this ark of salvation. We all want to be on it and not miss out. A lot of people missed out on the day of Ashura, 61 after Hijrah. They weren't there. Only 72 companions, and so many people regretted that. From that day on, up until today, people have been, trying to be as close to Imam al-Hussein as possible by commemorating Al-Arba'in, by commemorating Ashura, by commemorating Imam al-Hussein. Karbala is the university, and Imam al-Hussein is the dean of that university. He's the principal, he's the master, and he is our master. And we have to learn from what he has offered us.
MashaAllah, thank you so much. So I hope Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant us tawfiq to be on the path of Imam Hussein and experience this Arba'in walk, as you mentioned, dear Sayyidina. So dear brother Muhammad, we often hear some terms like soft power in politics and international relations, but not everyone is familiar with what they actually mean. For someone hearing the term for the first time, what is soft power, and why do some people describe the month of Muharram as a form of soft power, especially when it comes to like Shia community, Muslim community? They would say they have a great soft power, like these gems that gives them, pumps the life and energy into the blood of the fighters, for example, for instance, in the resistance front, for example. They carry the love of Imam Hussein and the Muharram. What is this soft power, please?
Okay, when it comes to tackling what soft power is, this is a Western terminology. So I gave a consent to the opposite idea to see what soft power is in their perspective. And I read some articles, you know, but we take whatever that comes from the uncredible sources, malicious sources, with a grain of salt. So when first I went to the Western world definition of soft power, and I came across a writing by an author. I'm just gonna bring it up so I give the right source and I do justice to the writer. It is called, and I read the article to get a perspective of it. It's called Iranian Activity to Expand Its Regional Religious Cultural Influence Through Soft Power. Mm. And the topic is the Amid Terrorism and Intelligence Research, you know, the institute who's in charge of, you know, publishing this article that is written by Dr. Raz Zemet. I don't know where he's from, but I can tell where his perspective. So I read it to find out what actually soft power is in Western terms and terminology. So I got a grasp on it. I found out that there's a lot of negativity that is spread about Iranians, the Iranian nation, and I'm an Iranian. Mm. I lived in this nation for 22 years, you know, give and take with my travels being disconnected. So then I found out this is not me. This is not the Iranian nation. This is not the nation that has been on the streets for 100 and something days after their leaders got martyred. So I went to the Iranian nation's definition of soft power, and who's better than Imam Khamenei? And when he explains what soft power is, he doesn't use that terminology. He uses instead cultural influence, spiritual power, voluntary mass movement, love-based mobilization, you know? And these are the words and terminology that resonates with the Iranian nation. But the soft power in the Western terminology is something that is coerced, is imposed. The culture is manufactured, it's sold to the masses. You see their, you know, their mainstream media is Hollywood. They manufacture culture and they run their agenda. But what does Muharram have to do with the soft power? Muharram is an organic, traditional movement that resonates with a lot of people because it's based on humanistic values that and ideologies that resonates with masses, based on love, based on compassion, based on connection between the nations. And that's why it's so globally widespread. Contrary to the
It's really interesting,
power.
Dear Brother Muhammad, that sometimes we see there's this propaganda apparatus is working day and day to bombarding, like, not just Iranian, like all the people in the Middle East, all the Muslims, you know, they're working, they're producing series, video games and everything to the brainwash the especially youngsters. But when the month of Muharram comes in the scene, we see all those things wash away, and it's a beautiful essence of Imam Hussein, as if Imam Hussein is like forging the heart of Muslims in a way to get back, to return, to revert to its original phase.
And a specific example of what you said is Imam Khamenei's short clip on hijab that a friend of mine who's a scholar in religious studies has. It's about hijab. My friend's name is Sayyid Muhammad Husseini Raghib. He's a social media influencer. He put a piece by Imam Khomeini about hijab, that even the people who do not understand the concept of hijab and who are the people who are behind the scenes that are manipulating this culture, when it comes to Muharram, because of the love for Imam Hussein and humanity, they attend the ceremonies and majalis, and they get corrected somehow. You know, the driver who drove me over here, he's a Tazi Khan. He does compassion or passion reciting for Imam Hussein. And he told me, because he depicts an exemplary of what the Ashura is about, the example, you know, a visual example of what Ashura is, and he accompanies it by the recitings. That is a very technical in its aspect, but he explains for me. Many people, you know, learn the concept of humanity, Islam, true religion, truth, and they correct themselves.
MashaAllah, thank you so much. Dear Sayyid Samer, history is full of important events and incidents that fade from public memory over time, right? So what is about the story of Karbala that continues to resonate with people more than 14 centuries later? Because we've got so many people who got slaughtered, so many people who have in a vicious way got killed and martyred. But this particular story is going to be remained in the hearts and memories of people till eternity. So,
yeah, you're right. I mean, this is one of the questions I've always had. It's like, you know what? People are getting slaughtered left, right, and center in Sudan. We've got problems. In Ethiopia, there's issues. In Rwanda, there was problems. Lebanon, Palestine, we see in what's happening in Gaza. So, you know, what's special about Imam Hussein? Why do we keep remembering Imam Hussein alayhi salam? Well, he represents, like I said, the manifestation of the Holy Quran, the epitome of tyranny and oppression against the rightful. And, you know, it just plays into the issue of soft power. The Holy Quran says at the very beginning in Surah Al-Baqarah, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسَ عَبُدُوا رَبَّكُمُ الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ, right? O people. Doesn't say, O believers.
Yeah.
And in Surah Al-Uhud, in Ali Imran, from 139, ayah 139 onwards, there's a lot of yaquluna, right? They say this, and the answer is qul. This is the reply to them. The Holy Quran doesn't go into, for example, how many people died and how many people were in the army on both sides and what they had, what missiles they were thrown. All of that, the Holy Quran doesn't go into it. And even when we focus on the numbers in the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in Karbala, we're focusing on numbers just to basically identify the significance of the oppression and the tyranny against those who are standing up for their principles and the rightful, the divine narrative.
Okay.
So that's why it's so significant. Mm-hmm. It was a huge issue, and the memory of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Karbala carried on for so many years and will be carried on for eternity is a major soft power that we have. So maybe we haven't called it soft power before. Maybe this is a Western terminology.
Yeah.
But it was the Holy Quran that speaks about soft power.
Okay.
We're not talking about how many missiles were thrown. We're not talking about how many people died in or were martyred in Uhud, right? We're not talking about all those issues that are empirical in nature, statistical numbers. No, we're talking about cognitive warfare. If they say this, which they will, this is what your reply is. This is what you have to say. This is what you have to plant into the hearts of people so that they can understand what is going on. They can understand how important it is to be principled, to stand up for what is right, to be honest, to have dignity, to have honor, which, by the way,
to manifest the right and stand by for it.
Yes. And this is, the Islamic Republic of Iran at the moment. What has been shown is also a manifestation. I know a lot of people will argue this, but they're not ma'soom and they're not infallible. They're not divinely guided. How can you compare?
Yeah.
I'm not comparing anyone to a ma'soom. That's not what we're doing. But what I'm saying is the manifestation and the way that they portrayed themselves to the world.
Sometimes you know the best teachers from their students.
Ahsant. That's right. And for us today, living in the modern world in 2026, the best teacher is someone who can show us how to interact with people today, right? It's sometimes very hard to say, look, but the Prophet was like this, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Okay, but he's divinely chosen. I can't be like him. Imam al-Hussein alayhi wa sallam, he's your role model. Bro, I'm not Imam al-Hussein, I can't do this. He's ma'soon.
Yeah.
Okay, what about now? Who is your role model today? And the Islamic Republic of Iran, I'm sure everybody has heard or read the 14 conditions. I mean, if you have a look at it, it's almost in agreement unanimously that Iran has come on top. How? through the teachings of the Holy Quran, through standing against oppression, through standing with the oppressed, for example, Lebanon, for example, Palestine, by not oppressing others. They're very fine in terms of, very precise in terms of who they strike, how they strike, when they strike.
Mm.
So all of those things are being represented by the Islamic Republic of Iran. And the teacher, the master is who?
Imam
Hussain. Ahsantum, mashallah. Dear brother, Muhammad, Muharram, the month of Muharram and the epic story of Karbala is observed not only in the vast part of Asia, among like Shia, I would say territories, but across the world, we have great majalis in Africa, like thousands and hundreds of thousands of people in Africa, they gather. I didn't know that. Just saw the clip and I understand that, oh my God, it becomes a global phenomena in South Asia, even in the United States, we have this Hussein Day, right? In New York, they dedicate one day, they just jump into the streets, gather and do the eulogy and chest beating and everything to mourn the tragic story of Karbala. And also you have this Who is Hussein movement.
Who is Hussein movement, yes.
It's a famous one.
I remember that.
So what essence does make this story of Ashura universal? Why so many people from different backgrounds and all sort of walks of life, they find themselves at one part, particular part of the story of Karbala, how they connect?
First of all, on the surface level, I could tell you that I'm a witness, so is Dr. Samer, who lived outside Iran abroad, that this testament is true, what she said. And we see that the message of the Islamic Republic of Iran is global because it has attached itself to the global Imam Hussein's message, which is global and widespread. And you know that it happens in Iraq, Lebanon, these mourning rituals, Pakistan, India, Afghanistan, Azerbaijan, Europe and North America, diaspora communities that I'm part of somehow. Now that I've been in Iran for 2 years, but the core argument in this discourse that is projected from Imam Khamenei's speeches in Muharram times during years and years of ceremony in Qom, Tehran, Mashhad, from this very aware political scientist and religious cleric and alim, that the theory of Ashura matches with this modern theory of soft power, which there is no state intervention, no coercion in disseminating the information, and it's mainly identity-based attractive.
Uh-huh.
So people identify some values, humanistic values, with the movement of Ashura. They get connected as the different nodes around the globe, even though the global hegemon is trying to cut off those channels. But the stream keeps going on because, as I said, it's based on cultural diffusion, it's based on love, based on compassion, it's based on human message.
It's really interesting. We have so many school of thoughts, especially philosophical and, economic related school of thoughts, Marxism, liberalism, you name it, right?
Lots of ism.
Sure, you name it. So many ists and, yes. A school of thoughts for sure. But you see that the people find compassion with Imam Hussein's story, despite all those different thousands of ideas. Every year you see one idea is being generated, is being, propagated by the company or that group or this group. But again, there is one true narrative of this version of pure Muhammadan Islam,
Islam, that's what it is.
Which is the path of Imam Hussein. And you see people feel connected with this one, and you cannot... They try to distort it. They try to somehow change it. But again, it continues its move. Why is it?
Because it's close to the absolute truth.
Mm.
When we talk about science in general, in a post-Newtonian term, everything becomes relativistic. And we wanted to... But then there is something that is absolute truth. And the inner human being... is a searcher of what the truth is and what the reality is and what actual facts behind this nature is.
You feel it like intuitively?
That feed the thirst for what the truth is, what the actual equality is, what the concept of freedom is, what is the concept of dignity, and it all explained in the message of Ashura. That is why even when we were joining the processions in North America, a lot of folks from different backgrounds were infatuated by who Imam Hussein is, and we really have done Imam Hussein injustice. And this movement has spread by its own self. You know, we haven't done enough to tell the world who Imam Hussein is, what Karbala is. If we do enough, possibly the whole world will join in on this movement, because it's so truthful and so authentic on its own.
Again, I want to, speaking of justice and the truth, the true message of Karbala, the themes of justice, it said Samer, the dignity, the sacrifice, and the standing up for what is right, not just sending and issuing and delivering speeches, to just rise like the thing that the Imam Hussein alayhi salam did, and his companion as well. So these concepts are relevant to everyone. Which values from the story of Karbala do you think are the most relevant to peoples today? The people, the citizens of this so-called modernity, and how people find themselves in one particular part of the story of Karbala, and why this story, again, it's universal in your point of view?
Well, what you're asking me to do is to...
I know, it's difficult. It's mission impossible.
To divide some of the attributes and principles that he was showing in Karbala and then choose one amongst them to say that this is the one that's relevant to us today in the modern world. Actually, they're all relevant. You can't really divide one and say this takes priority over the others. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is a hero. He's a brave, chivalrous hero that represented all the principles that, as you mentioned, one of the words that you said was intuitive. We all intuitively want to be principled. We all want to be honest. We all want to be good, not bad. We want to be good, honest people,
It feels right.
It feels right. Yeah. It feels comfortable. This is what being rich means, ghani, right? Being needless of something. So for you to be rich, you have to have these principles. For you to have a lot of money and wealth, and you can see these people who have a lot of money and wealth, but yet they're depressed and they commit suicide. Why? It's because they're not rich. Even though they're rich materially speaking, they have a lot of dollars in their account and a lot of properties and cars and shares and whatever, but they're missing something. Mm. And that is what Imam Hussein alayhi salam can give us. He can give us that tranquility in the heart that can push away even the calamities of what, for example, the Palestinians have faced, the genocide that they're facing, where you see them in the middle of rubble. There's nothing around them, nothing. And yet they sit down and they recite the Holy Quran with complete calmness and tranquility. They sit and eat their iftar during the holy month of Ramadan. Their family unit is intact, right? It's an important part of society. In the Western society today, what we have is the family structure falling apart. In the Islamic society, the family unit is important. How important was family to Imam Hussein alayhi salam at the time? He took them with him, knowing what they were about to face, right? Now, people argue this was suicide, he shouldn't have done that. But what role did they play, Sister Lady Zainab alayhi salam, when after the martyrdom, and she faced Yazid? What did she say? مَا رَأَيْتُ إِلَّا جَمِيلًا. I did not see except beauty.
It's like Imam Hussein has run a huge campaign on the Yazid, system, first in the battlefield and the second in the, propaganda.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. It was like all the things was miraculously was set at its part, and he didn't just rush to just doing some suicide mission.
It definitely was not hastened. It was not done in a rush, nor was it done in a way that was very slow. It was done just as it was required. And this is very important. And just a point on the issue of software that was mentioned, if I can add to that, and the importance of it. Sometimes we undermine the significance of what soft war actually is, as opposed to the hard war, where we have missiles thrown at each other. Soft war actually makes 90% of the battle that we're fighting.
Wow.
Military hardware is about 10%. Missiles being shot, bullets being shot, bombs being blown up, all of those things, that's 10%. 90% is this cognitive warfare, the propaganda that we have, the hearts of the people, the minds of the people.
The battle of narratives.
The battle of the narratives, ahsant. And this is where Sayyida Zainab comes into the role here, alayhi salam, when she speaks to Yazid in a way that is so strong, stern, and powerful. That is the battle of the narratives. And he ends up sending them back with gold and protection. He's like, you know what? If you stay here, I'm going to be the biggest loser here. So please, go away. He sets them free. So this is the important thing. And the importance of it is so significant that Netanyahu, in an interview with 60 Minutes, he said that this social media warfare is an F-35. They're attacking us with an F-35. Mm-hmm. That's how important it is to them.
Absolutely correct. Thank you so much, dear audience. Thank you so much for listening to our program. So stay tuned. We are going to get back after a short pause.
To Allah, you have shown us so much courage through the pain. You sacrificed your family and were killed thirsty. Oh, Hussein, you gave everything for Allah. Never did you complain. I swear to till my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Hussein, you live forever in our hearts and in our minds.
Oh, Hussein, you live forever
in our hearts and in our minds. I swear to Allah and to my last.
Until my last breath, I will remember Hussein. Salam alayka ya عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم.
Welcome back, dear audience. Thank you so much. You're listening to the live special program dedicated to the months of Muharram and Imam Hussein alayhi salam sacrifice in the desert of Karbala. So we have been talking with my dear brother Sayyid Samer and brother Muhammad at this studio and about the concept of soft power. And we are tackling this topic from different angles.
And now I want to pursue and continue my conversation with dear brother Muhammad. So, dear brother, many people from different faiths and backgrounds have shown interest in the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What aspects of Muharram do you think speak to people who may not even be Muslims? Because at the first glance, one might think that Ashura is an incident that took place in Islamic history. It's related to Islam. So not all people are Muslims. So why do other people like in other faiths are going to bother themselves to read or to feel connected with this story? But on the contrary, we see in reality, even Buddhists, even Christians, Jews, I've seen like Christian rappers like feel connected to the story of Imam Hussein, doing raps for Imam Hussein's epic story, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So what is going on here? Can you just shed light on this, again, universal and soft power of Imam Hussein alayhi salam?
Concepts like justice, dignity, equity, social justice, and you know, the equal spread of wealth and equal rights for men, women, and you know, when it comes to you know, Imam Hussein message, it encompasses all those aspects of human sciences. And many people, especially in Western world, when they live under tyrant hegemonic regimes, it's not only spread across the globe against the people in West Asia, but it's also subjugating their own people. And the system enslaves them, takes their freedom away in true sense, takes their dignity away, enslaves them to a system of vicious capitalism, which you know, shows itself in terms of individualism that they say in political science now. And at one point, human spirit reaches the breaking point, an inflection point.
And reject these.
Yeah, just like how it's in outside world, the whole world collectively reach an inflection point on October 7th, and the tides turned in terms of political sentiment and mindset. So this happens, you know, it happens because human beings are components of this whole, you know, society of global, you know, public opinion. So they get to those experiences and levels too. So, and then they look for an alternative to this world of lies and deceit and manufacturing narratives and manufacturing consents. And they see a message of the message of Imam Hussein, and it actually resonates with them, with their inner soul, and it transcends. It transcends globally.
Beautiful.
You cannot stop it.
Beautiful. You said somewhere the story of Kabbalah is not only about what happened in the battlefield, as we discussed before, but also about how the message is preserved. Now we're talking about the story of Kabbalah, thanks to Lady Zainab salamullah alayha, for example, and other ladies and other people, and Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, and the other scholars who just pass on and convey the message of Kabbalah generations after generations. So will you please talk about the role of women in the story of Kabbalah?
Yeah, look, every time I talk about the role of women, I get told by my family, you shouldn't be talking about women. So it's a bit difficult, but, you know, something that Brother Muhammad mentioned was, you know, equal rights for men and women. And this is very important. In Islam, the rights of women have been preserved, the rights of men have been preserved. Now, their rights are different, right? Their obligations are different. And this is something that the West is trying to, you know, manipulate the public opinion, as you mentioned. They want to change that. They want to make men and women as equals. They're not equals. Humans are equal.
But the destination is the same.
Heavenly destination is the same. We have equal rights as humans, whether I'm Palestinian or American or Australian or Iraqi, we're, as humans, we have rights. Now, you asked about Sayyida Zainab, and, you know, some people use that as, for example, their rights for women, for example, to do everything and anything they want. No, she came out at a point in time, that point of inflection that you mentioned, Brother Muhammad, that where she was needed to come out and speak in a powerful manner to a group of men. This is unheard of, right? This is something that is not something that is usual at the time, right? For a woman to come out and speak so forcefully with so much power, dignity, honor.
In an eloquent way.
In an eloquent way. Now, if Sayyida Fatima alayhi salam also spoke in such a way when the time came, right? She was not seen much of the time in public, right? She was doing her duties as a woman, as someone who would, you know, fulfilling her rightful. This is a big topic. I don't want to.
No one saw their like figures or even the shapes of their bodies.
She was protected even against a blind man when she was passing through the house with a blind man. She would wear the hijab, and the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam would ask, "Why are you wearing the hijab?" When he's like, "Of course, he knew the answer. It's not like he's the Prophet," but she would say, "Because even though he cannot see me, I can see him." Mm. Right. This dignity and honor that women have. Right. So the role of women is huge, right? It's huge, especially now when we're talking about the gatherings that we have every night.
It's correct, yeah. You see, the role of women, I participated in these nightly gatherings because I feel it's my, I'm indebted to my nation, to my leader, to my armed forces, to the humanity, to be in these nightly gatherings because it's the voice of humanity screaming for justice, for dignity, for sovereignty, for independence, for being able to, draw their own future and everything else. The women have a significant role. Their enchantments, their chanting is like a roar of a lion. When you see these women, they say, you could tell yourself, yes, the sons that are being educated by these women, they're gonna be revolutionaries. They're gonna be justice seekers. And our women, contrary to Western women, are not fooled by third wave feminist movement. When women cried out in the Western world for justice because they were being subjected on all levels to being products of Western apparatus, capitalism, they were treated as objects. They were put on every commercial. Then you can't fight the humanity in herself. At one point, they reached the breaking point. So they came and screamed for justice. And the state came and explained. They interfered and created the venue for them. It's called as a scapegoat and somehow to subdue their movement and create define for them. Now this is your right. You know, we explained for you what the equal right and women's right is, and they fooled them. But the Iranian women are strong. They're powerful. They're influential, and they don't look figures.
I would say like, Husseini women are strong.
Yes,
the women of Imam Hussein.
Imam Hussein. They look into the families of Prophet women figures like Hazrat Zainab, Salamullah alayha, Fatima Zahra. There is an article online. I studied last night when it came to the role of women in society. It's about Hazrat Zainab. I encourage everybody to read it. It's called. It's available on Khamenei.ir. It's called The Real Empowered Woman, Lady Zainab, peace be upon her. I encourage everybody to read that to get a good grasp of what a powerful woman and influential woman in an Islamic society is. And it's a very extensive topic to talk about, but I'd like to wrap it here.
To add to that, if I can, yesterday at a gathering at Tawheed Square, a young lady came out because it's the night of Sayyida Ruqayya alayhi salam, the 3-year-old, and we remembered her. And she was a young girl, the daughter of one of the martyrs, and she spoke.
Oh, beautiful.
And she just shook the whole Maidun. The whole square was crying in tears. It was amazing. This is, see, the role of women is important at the right time, at the right place.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, we don't want our Muslim Husseini women to be everywhere, on every billboard, like you say, in every advertisement, and freely available. No. They are very valuable and pure, and they have to be protected in the best possible way.
Exactly, and the whole world after this vicious attack and imposed war by the United States and Israeli regime have seen that Iranian women are ready in the front. One particular scene that comes to my mind is the moment that one of my co-workers actually, Sister Taba Tabai, if I'm not mistaken, her last name, was taking a selfie of the gatherings in Tehran was the bombs were dropped, and she didn't run away like the Fox News or I don't know CNN
did reporters, the same thing. Yeah. Just run away when a minor shooting has happened in the White House.
She was explaining the term, what Allahu Akbar means.
Mean exactly.
And then the bomb dropped.
And then the whole crowd were chanting Allahu Akbar. It was beautiful.
Yeah. That was a divine moment. Mm. That was an ilahi moment.
And it wasn't like a setup. It wasn't just set or something like artificially is being met. It was the real scene. The real heart of the people is being showcased in front of the whole world.
It's about the humanity prevailing. You know, I'm going to sum it up. You know, I don't know if you guys can get this viewpoint. I read an article a while ago when I was younger that homosexuality is a byproduct of feminism. Okay? So weak women give birth to weak men, educate weak men, create a weak society that is against the continuation of human race.
Interesting.
So it's very anti-human. But the strong women give birth to strong men, educate strong men. They come from the households that they have a strong women figure, and they become Martyr Qasem Soleimani. They become a powerful leader. Like Imam Khamenei, obviously he had a strong father and mother figure, and he was a very devoted person to his parents, and women have a huge role in educating the society.
And where do we get strong women from?
The daughters again, of Imam Hussein. The daughter of Imam Hussein.
The daughters of Sayyidina Zainab.
I think this is the moment I don't forgive myself if I won't mention the name of the mother of Hazrat Abbas, Abul Fazl Abbas. Lady Umm al-Banin, please do talk a little bit about the role of Lady Umm al-Banin and in the story of Karbala and passing on the story of Karbala, his bravery, his tolerance. Would you please talk a little bit about
where do we start? I mean, her name was Fatima, of course.
Fatima, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
So, but in respect to Sayyida Fatima alayhi salam, Fatima al-Zahra, she was not called Fatima. Mm. She was called Umm al-Banin because she had many sons, right? So in respect to the first wife, in respect to Sayyida Fatima al-Zahra, she would be called something else. See, this very small but fine
and delicate
detail, look at the respect that we have for each other as a family, right? The whole Quran is very important, places huge significance on the importance of family and husbands and wives, to the point, now I'll get to Abul Fadl al-Abbas in a minute, but to the point where even divorce is done in a proper, dignified manner, right? فَسَرُّحُوهُنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ right? Yeah, yeah. Either keep them or let them go in a proper manner. Anyway, Abul Fadl al-Abbas alayhi salam, what he did was amazing, right?
So and his brothers.
Exactly. But one of the stories that I will mention is that he was offered freedom. He was offered safe passage. He was offered, immunity. We'll give you everything you want. He was given a letter directly, right, from the enemy side to say that we will... He ripped it apart. Why? Because he stood with the truth. He stood with principles. He stood with Imam Hussein alayhi salam. On the other side, Imam Hussein alayhi salam would offer Amr ibn Sa'd, protection for his family, wealth and buildings and everything. He said, come with the truth. He lowers his head and goes on to commit the atrocities. Why? Because he's been fed all of this soft war, the propaganda war, and it has settled into his heart, and he could not lift that, despite the promises from Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So it's a lesson for us to, understand that for us to be victorious, we have to know which side we want to stand with.
Inshallah, we can gain these lessons and apply it in our daily life. Thank you so much, dear brother. So, dear brother Muhammad, many traditional institutions struggle to connect with younger generations these days. And it's not about just institutions and schools and entities. It's happening in our families as well. Like parents have difficulties to connect with youngsters, as if there is this gap between generations. But in the majlis of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and the months of Muharram, we see even those ones who are not necessarily religious types, or they are not having the same appearance as we have, they come and they shed in tears. Like we see different people with different hairstyle, some sisters without even
having fully hijabi or you know wearing
some even
a abaya.
Hijab,
I'm not or like say, not completely you know wearing their hijab or a scarf or like maintaining their women ruling. But again, the attraction of Imam Hussein alayhi salam attract them to these majalis. So what is about the months of Muharram and the Ashura that still attracts and inspire youngsters to come and find, as if they're like seeking to find something missing in their hearts?
Okay, yeah. When we talk about a young person, we have to define a young person. What distinguish a younger person from an older person? Older people have already, their mind has calloused to follow a certain school of thought. They have already, you know, they're a package of many right or wrong things. So they made their way in life. A young person is still undecided on what is the right path in life. And negativity and darkness, and they could really understand that something that is not authentic. And they're in search of truth. It's Majalis al-Hussein, the sittings of Imam Hussein. It resonates with them because it's the message of truth and justice, and young people can grasp on that because their mind is still malleable. It can it hasn't been taught a lot of propaganda. It hasn't been gone through the stages of life that their mindset is not changeable. You know, they're ready. And I feel happy for the people, the young people, that they find Imam Hussein in the early stage of life. Some people, you know, they get older and they're unfortunate. They make many mistakes in life, personal, you know, societal-wise. It's detrimental to their own health and society's health. And then at later ages in life, they find Muslim, but it's never too late. Yeah. But that's why it's better to focus on spreading the message of Imam Hussein to youth. So in the correct way, in shape or form, whether it's a noha, it's a taziyah khani, passion recitation, elegy, in whatever shape or form, morning precision, we have to, you know, present it in its essence, something that animates from what Imam Hussein intended for, and it's doing its own justice. We just have to be, as Dr. Samer said, if we want to be victorious, we have to attach ourselves to the right side of the history and the right message. And that resonates with young people. I think they're more fortunate than that in that
and
sense.
And by the way, the young people are the people that are being targeted as well by the propaganda of the those who want to have the cognitive warfare to change their minds.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting, the story of Karbala. We can find character for every person, whether it's like youngsters, older,
absolutely,
women, men. Christians. Who got like reverted,
yes.
Like,
yes.
It was interesting. Thank you so much, both of you guys. So I guess the last question I would like to ask from both of you is that the last thing that you want to say, that any advice for a person like me to use the best of this month, what can I do to preserve in every in any light, any spiritual rank, if I even gain from participating in the majalis, how can I keep it for further? Like so many people come to the majalis of Imam Hussein, they shed tears, they become a better person, they wanted to keep their promises afterwards to become a better person for the societies, to save the world somehow, or to save by saving themselves first. But they forget, like, after the months of Safar has passed. So, dear Sayyidina, how can we do that? How can we preserve this Husseini essence in our existence?
So, there's two questions there. What should we do? What advice? And how
exactly
we should do it? So, first one you alluded to, which is advice for both myself and everybody else, not just for you, but it's to walk away being a better person, learning something, a principle, and applying it throughout their life for the next year, until the next year of the University of Karbala, right? So make sure that you walk away having learned something, not that you are simply going to do best, chest beating and eating the food and going to the matam. No, this is something where you actually want to take something practical out of it. How you should do it? Well, you should be attentive to the lectures. Try to take that, at least one thing, right? You've got 10 nights of lectures. you may not be able to do, for example, they may give you 2-3 pieces of advice every single night, something to learn from Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. You don't have to do every single one of them. Take one of them at least, and make sure that you stand by that principle for the rest of the year.
So we need to educate ourselves by participating in majalis. Is there any like other sources like books that we can read or...
Well, there are lots of books about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, but I would start with the Holy Quran. Take one ayah at least, read it every, for example, read the tafsir of it on a daily basis or weekly basis or monthly basis, apply that particular principle. The Holy Quran is the one that will hold everything together. And the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, of course, with regards to this particular ayah, what they say about it. If we can apply, for example, controlling our anger for 1 month. Imagine what will happen.
Yeah, let's do that.
Imagine if we can, for example, treat our wives and husbands properly and in the best possible way for 1 month. What will happen? Our children, what will happen? All of these things. If we can do that and apply it with honor and dignity and truthfulness and honesty with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as the ultimate goal, fi sabilillah. I'm doing this for sabilillah. I'm not doing this so that I can please someone else. No. I'm doing this so that I can get close to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
Yeah, that's the goal. That's the ultimate goal, sure.
Ahsant.
Beautiful, mashallah. Thank you so much. Dear brother Muhammad, so please you tell us that how we can use the month of Muharram as an opportunity, not to just cry for the sufferings of Imam Hussein, because obviously Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his companions are in heaven now, right? Being granted the blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So what we need, we are hopelessly probably need their shafa'a, need their help to become a better person, to use our opportunity to take this life not for granted. So what can we do?
In mathematics, we have something that is called domain and something that is called a range, and there is a process that is called a function. For a person to be accepting to the truth, you know, you have to nurture that power of intellect, intellectuality. Like the kathmul ghaiz, or like swallowing of your anger, is not going to be possible if you don't have that power of intellect to exert that, you know, to put the intellect in the power, in the driver's seat, to understand the message of Imam Hussein, the school of thought of Imam Hussein. One person has to be perceptive to that, okay? Upping your educational level, politically, historically, you know, religiously, from all aspects, not being in a state of ignorance, make you susceptible to be able to distinguish what is the truth and what is a falsehood. So I encourage everybody, okay, to read books about the tragedy of Karbala, or philosophical books that actually depicts the concept of Karbala and its true message, you know, which is about humanity in its essence. To understand why Imam Hussein, you know, took on such a journey, okay. And for example, there is a book translated by a friend of mine. He's from Australia. His name is Zaid Islami. Forgive me, I don't know who the writer is, but the writer is a very known scholar. It's called, if I'm not mistaken, The Tragedy of Imam Hussein. Is
I think
it?
So. Yeah, I think
it's a green book. It's a beautiful book. Before I was looking at Karbala, I was resonating with Karbala on a level that was deep enough. I could understand the altruism, sacrifice for the better of humanity and better of good, you know, the concept of martyrdom. But unless you read a scientific book, okay, that, you know, kind of quench that thirst of your critical thinking faculty, you won't be able to understand. You know, it provides a domain for you, okay, that you can when you tackle on all the problems of this world, now you're equipped to some, like, you know, data, and you have that functionality of using the intellect, because you have conditioned yourself to true knowledge. And then when the range or the product of that is a healthier society, healthier youth population, more revolutionary people in all aspects of you know, society, science, whether it's human science or it's physical science, we give birth to a healthier society, a healthier family, better family union. And we won't have the dysfunctional families and society of the Western society that is on the verge of crumbling and breaking. And we see we're witnessing the downfall of the hegemonic power of Western Empire.
Indeed.
Ahsanta, mashallah. Thank you so much, dear brother Sayyid Samer and dear brother Muhammad. And we, as we leave this discussion, we pray that the blessings of the sacred months of Muharram touch every heart and every home. May we be granted the wisdom to recognize truth, the strength to uphold it, and the sincerity to live by the values we admire. Thank you so much for joining us, both of you guys. And thank you so much, our dear audience. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala accept our mournings and deeds in the blessed months of Muharram. We'll be having a special live program dedicated to cover the ma'arif of and the lessons of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his Ahlul Bayt, inshallah, tomorrow as well. So stay tuned for that as well. And jazakallah khair. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Why did they not proclaim?